The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the award-winning MG4, the no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.
This morning, but as you heard in the bulletin there, J.D. Vance, the Vice President of the United States, says he has great optimism that the ceasefire in Gaza will hold. However, the US President Donald Trump has warned that Hamas will be eradicated if it breaches the Gaza deal with Israel, but said that he would give the Palestinian militant group a chance to honour the truce. Well, joining me now is Jonathan Fowler from UNRWA to discuss the difficulties around getting aid into the Gaza Strip. And obviously, Jonathan, this was one of the most fundamental parts of this deal, that the borders would be opened and all of those millions of individuals within Gaza would get aid. How is that faring? Just what percentage of aid have they managed to get in at this point? I know the target is to try and get close to 2,000 tonnes a day. And Jonathan, we've just lost that line at the moment, but we do also have Stephen Kapos. And Stephen is an 87-year-old Holocaust survivor who was just 7 years of age in 1944 when he was separated from his family in his native Hungary. And he's been a vocal supporter of Palestine, and he joins me on the line now. Stephen, thank you so much for speaking to us on the Hard Shoulder this evening. As I said there, J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff, they are in the region. They say that the implementation of this deal is exceeding all expectations. There's great optimism that the ceasefire will hold. What is your assessment of what feels, I think, like pretty precarious peace in the region?
Hello, thank you for inviting me. I think precarious is the right word because Israel has such a back history of not keeping to the agreements of ceasefires, and they didn't keep to it last time. And I think there already had been serious infringements and bombing on very flimsy excuses. So we hope that with American influence exerting itself more strongly, there will be less of that in the future.
Are you heartened by the fact that J.D. Vance and Steve Witkoff have travelled to the region again and are pushing for further negotiations, for further talks?
Yes, I am. And I think this is absolutely critical, that the U.S. should exercise maximum pressure on Netanyahu and the Israeli government. But equally, it is very discouraging, the noises that are coming out of the Israeli sources, where they reassert their aim to completely eliminate the Hamas, and that probably can only be achieved by violence, renewed violence. And I'm worried about that.
Stephen, you might stay on the line now because we do have Jonathan Fowler from UNRWA joining us again. Jonathan, I don't know if you heard my question, but I know the target was to try and get 2,000 tonnes of aid back into the region once those crossings were reopened. How far off that target are they now?
Horribly far. Saying that the aid that's got in since the start of the ceasefire is a drop in the ocean would be massively overgenerous. And let's not forget that Gaza was pushed into a man-made famine because of the policy of depriving the population of aid either at all or at any sufficient scale. We have to overcome that. We have to have a massive, massive scale-up. And we've been saying this since the start of the ceasefire. It has to happen. It has to happen immediately. And all actors, ourselves included, as the largest humanitarian agency from the UN, we have to be able to get our aid in, and we are currently not allowed to.
Because there was a ban on UNRWA bringing aid in, which was imposed at the beginning of March, and that hasn't been lifted yet. In terms of what is getting into the region, is it aid or is it commercial trucks that are generally going into Gaza at this point?
It's a mixture. And I mean, it is important that, you know, it's not sort of one at the expense of the other or something like that, because to rebuild any society, you know, the economy has to function again. And the commercial sector during the previous ceasefire, so January to March this year, you know, movement of commercial goods was also something that was critical, because you have to be able to get the economy moving again. You know, the population is entirely dependent on humanitarian aid, but there has to be change on that front. The thing is, though, that you know, the humanitarian aid is, I mean, for example, the kind of food aid that goes in and that we could bring in if we were allowed, it's sort of nutritionally balanced, you know, calculated to be enough to last a family of 5 to 2 weeks, all of these kind of things. So that's very different from commercial goods, but both things have to happen at the same time, and they have to happen at scale.
In terms of an area like northern Gaza, how difficult is it to get any type of aid, or indeed, as you say, commercial items to that particular region, given the huge damage to infrastructure in Gaza over the last couple of years?
Oh, the north has been particularly complicated, as has sadly Gaza City, because of you know, the massive increase in military operations there in the run up to the ceasefire. I mean, the north was the epicenter of the hunger crisis, the initial one, you know, in 2024. Gaza City, of course, that area itself, Gaza Governorate, that was the first area to actually fall into famine. So indeed, you're right to cite the huge destruction of infrastructure. But I mean, the whole of Gaza Strip is like a moonscape of rubble. It's just a question of which areas are more or less, you know, rubble strewn. Also, the fact is that people have been desperate to move back from where they were forcibly displaced to their home communities. So we've had people going backwards and forwards, you know, sort of south to north, west to east, just depending on where they were forced from. And that, of course, creates complexity. And it's completely legitimate that people want to go back to try to find what may be left of their homes, of their previous lives, and tragically to try to recover the remains of dead relatives. The humanitarian operation, of course, is rendered very complex on that front, and clearly not enough aid is getting to all areas.
We know the Rafah crossing, we've all heard of the Rafah crossing in Egypt, is a really crucial entry point for humanitarian workers and for lorries who are transporting aid and food and fuel, which is absolutely essential for daily life to be restored in the region. What is the story with that crossing at this point and getting it fully reopened and staying opened?
I mean, the sort of on-off approach and the lack of clarity is incredibly problematic, because, I mean, you know, Rafah is very significant, but in fact, all crossings need to be open, and they need to be open at capacity and to allow aid to flow in at scale, because the point is the crossings are all around. And so, you know, a more northerly crossing means being able to get aid into to people in the north. And Rafah, of course, is particularly critical for the south. So, but, you know, this kind of sort of switching it on and off like a tap, that's really, really something that needs to stop, because, you know, you have to have clarity as a humanitarian. You need to be able to do your operation. You need some kind of visibility. We're all incredibly adaptable, because around the world, the point about humanitarian operations is they are, you know, they happen in very, very difficult places. But this sort of, you know, little hope, maybe a little flow in and then maybe not, and it's going to be shut, that makes it very hard to plan and to operate things in a coherent way.
Stephen, as I said at the top there, you personally are a Holocaust survivor. How do you feel you and your legacy in your own life will have been impacted by what has happened in Gaza and by what Israel has carried out in the region?
Well, we did suffer, of course, under the Holocaust. In March 1944, the Germans invaded my home country, Hungary, and Budapest. And from that point onwards, we had particularly hard times. And at one point, from about October, I, as a 7-year-old then, had to be in hiding along with others in protected by Red Cross and by the Protestant churches organized homes. And so I had that experience on the one hand. And on the other hand, we also happened to be at a location close to the royal castle and palaces in the Buddha Hills of Budapest, the Buddha side of the Danube, where the climax of the fighting between the Soviet and German troops took place. So we had a kind of double jeopardy, and I also seen total destruction in that particular zone, with similar piles of rubble and destroyed buildings, but on a much more limited area and scale, as I can see when watching the news about Gaza and the genocide there. So a lot of experience that we had gone through sort of resonates with what has been happening in Gaza. And it is particularly sad from my point of view that afterwards it was hoped that this sort of thing, this Holocaust and similar genocide would never be repeated and visited on other people. And it's particularly bitter experience and disappointment to see in our time repeated, and this time live screened and happening in front of our eyes.
Yeah, and we have all watched the horror unfolding in Gaza. We have seen the deprivation. We have seen starving, injured children left orphaned because parents have been killed in explosives. It's been absolutely horrific to watch. And I think about those children and I think about the trauma that they have carried, that for so many of them, that might have been the soundtrack of their lives for the last 2 years, hurt and pain and anguish. You have experienced trauma like that yourself. How does that impact you in your adult life?
Well, first of all, I was too young at the time, luckily in some ways, that I was not fully aware of the implications and the dangers. But I realized it more in retrospect. But I do find a lot of resonances between what we had experienced and looking at Gaza. For example, the repeated dislocation because of the fighting, the house-to-house fighting around us, we had to relocate suddenly and in dangerous circumstances into uncertain alternative places. And this was very hard. And I can see Gazan people, the Palestinians, subjected to very similar things when they have to leave sometimes within 24 hours notice and go to an appointed place which is supposed to be safe, which we do know not necessarily safe. They have to trust information from their enemies. And there's a great problem of families who have, our family had, disabled members. What do you do with them? Do you leave them behind? They can't take the journey on foot, which, you know, there's never any transport laid down. So all these things are very similar. Also, for a few months, not as long as the people of Palestine have been subjected to, but we did have we did have restriction of food, no electricity, no water, etc. And I can see that repeating, of course. We've just been saying how undernourished and actually there's a famine, has been a famine recently there. Also, when the fighting was over, we went home, inverted commas, because we weren't sure what conditions we would find on the other side of the Danube, where our original home was. And at a glance, when we got there, we realized that we became homeless because a huge explosion opposite our building took all the walls down, and only the concrete frame remained with our furniture within it. So at a glance, you had to realize that you became homeless. Well, that is, again, similar experience to what a lot of people in Gaza experience. They go down into a shelter and come up, and the building over them is gone in an instant.
It's incredible, actually, to hear you, Stephen, and to hear sort of some of the parallels in your experience and what many people will have experienced in Gaza over the past 2 years, and indeed will experience in the future. Stephen Kappos and Jonathan Fowler, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the award-winning MG4. The no-compromise electric hatchback with a 450-kilometre range. Recharge your soul.